Hey, podcast listeners, I wanted to remind you that you have until August 16th, that's this Tuesday, to get your name entered to win one of 10 Peter Max posters signed. So don't forget, email us at podcasts@kut.org, put Meet Peter Max in the subject line, and you'll be entered to win. Good luck.
Think about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing thing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart.
We don't have any idea why
we're
doing
so smart
most of the things that we're doing.
But here's the deal. The thing about people is we can't survive doing everything all by ourselves. We need help from others. I'm Art Markman.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and this is Two Guys on Your Head. Today, the psychology and purpose of politeness.
One of the things that most parents agree when you're raising children is you want them to be liked by other people, right? You want other people to have positive feelings about them. And one of the ways that we do that is we teach our children the conventions of social interaction, including saying please when they ask for something and saying thank you when someone helps them in some way or gives them something that they've asked for. Now, there's a reason for that. I mean, that's not just some weird thing that Emily Post made up sometime in the distant past. I mean, there's actually a reason for that, because that provides a way for social interactions to proceed in a way that acknowledges relationships among people, in a way that not saying those things doesn't.
We call it, in American, or Western society, we call a lot of those conventions politeness conventions, but you could argue that they manifest themselves very differently in very different subpopulations. So, if you hang out at a middle school, you signal your membership in a middle school community often by insulting the person that you're asking to do something, but by doing that, you're basically demonstrating your common membership in a particular community.
Right. But I think irrespective of what the conventions are, following the conventions means that you're operating in a system that most people have agreed to operate in, right? When you do something that's apart from that convention, whatever it happens to be, you're saying, well, I'm apart from this group. I'm not acting in accordance with what the group seems to have agreed upon are the rules of interaction.
And then I can't trust you.
Right.
Which is why I might be more reluctant to want to do something for you. Because if I can't trust that that's going to be reciprocated, then why am I putting myself out? And the help that we get from other people almost never settles up in the moment. Right. We settle up over the long term. When you ask somebody to do something for you, there is an assumption that you are going to be available to do something back for them in the future. Now, how do you mark that?
Yeah.
How do you let people know, I understand that I'm a member of this community, broadly speaking, and that even though I am imposing on you in this moment to do something for me, over the long term, this is going to work out. And the way you do that is through this elaborate dance of social convention in which we do things like say please and thank you, which are signals that, when you say please, you are acknowledging I'm asking you to do something for me that doesn't really pay off for you in this moment, but you're going to do it because I'm acknowledging that we're members of this common community.
Yeah. And one thing we need to emphasize about this isn't to say that every act of generosity is a calculation about the possible need for reciprocity. I mean, we come to feel good about generosity in the moment because of the contingencies that are operating when we tend to be generous. I mean, if we do help someone, whether they drop something or fell, they generally look appreciative and they smile at us and are grateful and that kind of thing. And that certainly reinforces that aspect of our behavior. But over the long term, as Art's saying, our species would not have survived without the ability to cooperate and join forces and work toward goals in a way that brings the resources of many people together. But I think one of the challenges that's present now is that we say, well, when you start referring to other people as part of a separate category, you're basically saying there will never be an instance where I expect to need to cooperate with you, right? Now, that's a huge decision to make. But one of the ways that we use to signal group membership is when we apply the conventions of social interaction to other people. So if I say, you know, you have to be polite to everyone, that's a tangible acknowledgement that everyone is a part of some group that I'm also a part of. So when I learn from my parents and my peers and whomever else that I have to say please and thank you and wait my turn to speak and wherever other convention you learn about social interactions, and I apply that to a lot of different people, well, then I'm saying that all those people, despite their differences, are part of some group that I've recognized that I'm a part of too. Once you cut that channel off and you say, well, I don't have to be polite to that person or that kind of person. Well, now I've said, now you're in a different category, that's in a different group. And as I said a moment ago, now I have all this greater number of people about whom I need to be suspicious because they're not part of my in-group.
It's very hard to get someone to cooperate with you if they fundamentally believe that you're part of a different category. Because once you're a member of the out-group, they're going to be more mistrustful of you, less likely to want to do something for you, less likely to want to interact with you. And so you're trying to create more of an us relationship with somebody than a them relationship. And a lot of the conventions that we use, a lot of the language conventions that are built into our system of politeness, are there to try to demonstrate common the membership in a common category.
Yeah. And, you know, as we've said on many other shows, it's not the case that our thoughts precede our behavior necessarily, right? I mean, we act in ways that then affect our thinking. And if a parent teaches me to be courteous to someone who doesn't look like my family and doesn't look like anybody else that I hang around on a regular basis, but my parents just say thank you to that person or say please when you ask them. Well, now I'm practicing a behavior that's influencing my perception of that person, but the action precedes the perception.
Next week, we'll talk about why a high IQ can't tell you everything you need to know about intelligence with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. David Alvarez is our engineer. I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.